No, so at okay, so at what point? So did you do your feature during, after, or before you did Startup?
Oh, no, the feature was 2013 that we shot it.
Oh.
So yeah, good question though, because yeah, we released it in 2017, but no, yeah, we shot that in 2013, which is crazy.
Wow.
It feels like forever ago.
So yeah. To segue, this is an interesting topic, so our, mm-hmm. our listeners are clear. There is, there's commercial success in Hollywood, literally booking commercials or episodic, major episodic television like Startup, and also major feature films with big names. And then there's the projects that I would call as indie filmmakers, what I would call our love children, mm-hmm. and our passion projects, so to speak, where maybe we end up spending your own money out of pocket and you're really guerrilla filmmaking. So Startup is a Netflix hit show, is a great example of Michael achieving some serious commercial success in Hollywood and being a steadily working actor in a mainstream where everybody has Netflix. It's very accessible. Everybody knows about Netflix. Now, you wrote and produced and starred in a full-length feature film called Maybe Someday, and this was your love child. So this is mm-hmm. a different part of being a creative. That's not necessarily going to make you a nice big fat paycheck like a hit show or a national commercial. But let's talk about that. When did you start writing Maybe Someday, and talk about the premise? What is this about? And you're the writer of this feature.
Yeah. Yeah. I started writing it in, I want to say like the end of 2012.
Okay.
And then the premise is basically, in a nutshell, a hopeless 20-something slacker. He's kind of lost in life. Everything's kind of been hand.
And you play this role?
Yes.
The lead
yeah.
role. Okay.
Right. Yeah. His name's Hal. He's basically down on his luck. He just he lives in that fear that everything that he's going to do in life is just going to fail.
He's going to be a failure.
Yeah, he's been privileged. His parents have some money, so they've obviously been helping him. So he's never really had to like make an effort or do really anything in his life. And he lives in a garage that he, you know, mm-hmm. is rented out. We don't really know. I always assume his parents are paying for it because he's not working. He's never really had a job. He's just never really done anything. And he just drinks and feels sorry for himself and just has no faith in himself at all. And then one day he gets a knock on his door from this teenage girl who's 16, and she says, I'm your daughter. I'm from the future. I learned how to teleport, and I'm back to help you get your shit together, because you end up becoming a fucking mess in the future, and even more so than you are now. And there's a lot of stuff that we learn as the movie progresses of just how awful he really does become, mm-hmm. and what happens to him down the road. And it's really bad. It's kind of this feel good, drama comedy, that is all about the general theme is that it's never too late to kind of, restart, and get that next chapter in your life going, or to get the life that you want. 'Cause he says early on in the movie, I want to have a family. I want to have a kid. I want to have, you know, that the house with the white picket fence, but he just doesn't know how to get it, or just doesn't believe that he's deserving of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of the general theme of it. And then it's about his relationship with his daughter. Is she really his daughter? Is she lying? Is she really from the future? And he becomes more obsessed with figuring out who his future wife is going to be, as opposed to deciding, yeah, I'm going to be a good dad. Okay, I'm going to trust this girl and try to be better for her. And she's a drinker and she's a mess and her life is falling apart and she's becoming him in a lot of ways. So, so we kind of see that relationship and that journey. It's a lot of about anxiety and just kind of those feelings that we might not be good enough, or why try? Like we talked about with the writing, and if you want to be an actor or anything, you can't just sit around and say, "Well, I'm probably going to fail, so I'm not even going to try." And so that's Hal's curse. That's what he's kind of struggling with when we first meet him. So that's the long-winded description of the movie. But I'm really proud of it. You leave it feeling really good at the end. I think I'm most proud of the ending, and just kind of all wraps together and leaves you feeling like inspired, hopefully.
You know what? You just reminded me of something. Something you said, Michael. It was on one of my favorite podcasts. They were talking about fear of failure or fear of success, and they said to the guest host, I'm not good with names, but she's very big into improv comedy, and she teaches like corporations how to use improv to help run their teams and stuff. But They ask her the question, what do you think people are more afraid of, failure or success? Are they more afraid to succeed or are they more afraid to fail? And she said, I think people are more afraid of success because what does that mean when you succeed? It means things are going to change and people are afraid of change. And when I heard that, my mind was like, whoa, because I hold I hold myself back in my life in so many ways that I relate to the fear of adulting and the fear of like fully embracing what it is to be in your 30s. And I think that's the rooted, like, and it's interesting, your character, you said his name is Hal. There's so many interesting themes there that can help so many people. Like if he's drinking a lot, there's the theme of addiction and he's running from something and he's afraid of adulting. He's afraid of whatever the next chapter is. So let me stay in this endless adolescence or this endless, like, you know, slacker. I'm, you know, I'm 30 something, but let me pretend I'm 21 years old forever. And what are the fears around that? And I think it's interesting that this future daughter comes to him and she's saying like, this isn't all about you. Like your influence is going to affect your children. And so it's a really interesting story. I saw the movie. I love it. Thanks. Your performance is great. The writing is so clever and original. I love that you came up with this idea that your future child could show up at your door. So interesting. And
it came from reality. I mean, it really did.
Did your future child show up at your door? You're like, his name is Ben.
Right? That'd be the ultimate twist. Ben is my son.
You're like, this is based on a true story, you guys.
No, but I was struggling. We talked about this a little bit, Shane, and that's, we can do a whole other episode all about anxiety and depression and just the mental health
advocates.
But I was really struggling. I was in a really, really dark, awful place and in my life. And, you know, just feeling like, you know, and as we talked about before, Hollywood has that ability to kick you down and beat you down and make you feel like you're not good enough. Ultimately, that it's just like, you're not deserving of this because you suck. You know, you're not booking anything because you suck. You know, like it makes you, you know, feel that after a while. It's and like, wow, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Let me tag on to that. It also does something where you're in a time warp. I feel like in LA, my sense of time and how much time was passing became skewed. One is the weather. There is none. So I was like, is it fall or summer? I don't know. I have to go back to Michigan to gauge what season it is. But also you get, I mean, we can all relate to this as actors. You get that Peter Pan complex. We're chasers of dreams we've had since childhood. All of us wanted to be actors as children. And it's like, how do you strike that balance of embracing who you are as an adult, but not letting go of your dreams? And these are really interesting because sometimes it's like, it's one or the other for people. It's either you're a family person or you're a career person. And I certainly have not struck that balance in my life, you know, but so you touch on these themes of addiction, depression, and having experience in your real life, overcoming anxiety. And I think that's really great to talk about that openly, you know, because you never know who you're helping, who's listening, because it's so common, you know.
For sure.
Well, it goes to show, like, you created this story, and us as artists at our darkest could come and bring something to life. And that, I mean, like you said, that could help a lot of people. And you create, I haven't seen the movie yet. Now I want to see it.
Where can he watch it?
Yeah. Maybe someday.
Cool. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it for sure. It is on Amazon right now. It's like three bucks to rent.
I love time travel.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I know you love Back to the Future. That was one of my favorites too, as we've talked about. So, I know I was sitting there on my couch one day, literally just feeling really, I was at a very low point, and I imagined like, wow, do you want to stay in this place forever like this? And what would happen right now if your kid from the future showed up and saw you right now? Like, what would that look like? And that literally in the moment, I was like, holy shit, that's an idea.
That's my screenplay.
Yeah. And I went, wow. I went for a walk. It was really weird. I went for a walk that day. And I was living in Glendale at the time. I was living in this guest house. It was kind of felt like a garage. So Hal and me are very similar. We have a lot of similarities in a lot of ways, and that it was a lot of it was autobiographical. I was walking, and I walked by this house where this family, it was a husband and mom, were swinging their daughter between their arms, like she was swinging between them. And I remember walking by them and thinking, I am so far away from getting that in my life. I was single. I was broke, you know, just going through so much shit. And I'm like, I was 32 at the time, feeling old and feeling like, wow, this is awful. Like, I've got to get my shit together. And, and that was kind of the catalyst. And now that scene is actually in the movie. I shot there's a scene where I pull up in a car and I see a mom and a father swinging their daughter, between their arms. And it was really surreal to film that and to watch it back. Cause I'm like, wow, I'm like seeing a piece of my life that actually happened, you know, on film, you know, or multiple scenes in the movie that actually happened in real life. But, it's very surreal. So, I don't remember how I got on that tangent, but I just wanted to bring that back real quick to kind of talk about the parallels of my life and the inspiration for it, for the movie. And, I don't know. I'm really proud of it.
Well, it's just a lesson that, you know, as an artist, you can feel that way. And the best thing to do is create, like write it down. I mean, I'm not a writer or anything, but sometimes I feel like, man, I should just sit down and do it. And that's what it takes.
For sure.
It's just sitting down and
doing it, man. Yeah.
Even if you do it for an hour every day and do nothing, at least you're sitting down and trying.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the thing I've learned. You know? Yeah. It's like, if you can,
and it comes out of your authentic
self.
Exactly. It's like, it's you.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. If you can just get,
and there's so many people could relate.
Yeah, for sure, dude. For sure. That's the thing I've learned too, is like, if you can just get, like, it's so much better to just, if you pull up that document of the script screenwriting software or whatever you use, and just write stuff down, it's so much better than staring at a blank page. Mm. Like, if you just get words out and then literally, like, just write it out and then leave it for the day and come back like a week later, I guarantee you. I just was doing that with the script I'm working on right now. I was reading through it. I'm like, who wrote this? Like, what the hell? Like, when did I write this? You know what I mean? Like, word thoughts come out of you in the moment where you might think, this sucks. You know, this is not good. But don't delete it. Just leave it.
Don't delete
and
it.
And abandon it. And then come back like a week later. And you'll be surprised at what you find. Like, that's what I've learned. And that's what I did with this. I started writing it around 2012 at that moment, that catalyst of feeling at my lowest. And just saying, you know what, I'm just going to write it. Like, I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to, I've got it. Something compelled me, and fueled me. It gave me that energy in the moment to say, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to write it. So I just got it all out, and thankfully had some, producers, some friends, Christy Dooley and Cindy Pop, who both work on The Bold and the Beautiful at CBS, and have for many, many years. And I love them both dearly. They were working on a script, trying to get a script made at the time. And they called me in to do a table read of it. And I remember thinking like, man, this script is not very good. I'm not trying to be a dick, but it's not good. And so afterwards they asked me for my thoughts. They were like, what'd you think? We're going to make this. Like, we want to make this movie. What'd you think? And I told them, I was like, guys, I'm not trying to be mean, but this is just bad. Like, I don't, there's nothing to connect to. I don't care about any of these characters at all. And then, I'm not normally this person, but I was like, I have a script actually that I've been working on. I sent it to them, and I had, you know, I kind of had that rough draft that I was able to kind of bust out in that moment. And they read it and they were like, you know what? We have some notes. But let's talk. Let's get this thing made. So by 2013, that summer, we were shooting it. So it was a testament again of just how you just never know, you know, you've got to just do it, You know, you have to just do it. Just get it, because you just literally never know. Just like with Ben calling me out of the blue for Startup, like you can't sit around and be like, oh, nothing's happening right now. Oh,
you have to
I'm
make
failing.
Shit happen,
right? And also accept that it can't always be your time. Like you can't always be booking stuff. You can't always be making movies that are getting out there and made and doing well. There's going to be times where like things aren't happening or things suck, or like you're like, ah, I haven't booked anything in like 10 months, or oh, I can't finish a script. I haven't finished a script in like a year. It's okay. Like that's a part of this journey. Like, you have to like allow that to happen and just embrace it and say like, this is part of it, and forgive yourself and not beat yourself up, and just remind yourself, okay, I'll get back on the horse. You know, now I can, you know, I've had my downtime. I've had my time to like not get shit done, but I'm going to get it done now, you know, and just do it. Like we said, Aris, like you said too, and Shayna, like just get that shit on the page. You know?
Absolutely.
Book that, send that audition in, put that audition tape together and submit it. You know, don't worry about if it's like, ah, my hair looks weird, or oh, my accent in it isn't very good, my Boston accent, or, you know, like just fucking do it, you know, because you never, it's all subjective. It's all subjective. So that's the thing.
Yeah. And enjoy your downtime.
Yeah.
Because then what if you do start working a lot?
Right.
You're not going to have downtime.
Yeah. Yep.
When you were talking about being afraid of success, what happens then? If you're successful, no downtime.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not just shooting, it's promotion, it's everything else, you know. Just working it all the time. And being on a series, on a show, you're working 12, 16-hour days.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, enjoy the downtime.
And quote unquote famous, if you become a household name like Milo.
Yeah.
I thought about this the other day, about how I've always dreamed about, you know, as a little 9-year-old Shayna, oh, I want to win an Oscar. I want to be a serious dramatic actress. I thought about this the other day. Wow, can you imagine actually having to think about paparazzi? Actually having to think about the loss of your privacy and what fame really is, what it is in reality and what the fantasy is. And I just thought about, I know I hold myself back in so many ways in my life, but there is those fears of that, those kinds of change. Michael, while we were talking about the writing process and Just Do It Just Right, I was, I had called Michael about a month ago, and I was spitballing with him about an idea I have for a short that actually both of you are in it. I haven't talked to Aris about it yet, but, you know, I texted Michael, and I still have the text. It was a Jordan Peele quote. And he said, when I'm writing the first draft, I'm constantly reminding myself that I'm simply shoveling sand into a box so that later I can build castles.
Yeah, love
that. I thought that was a cool quote. There's so many great quotes about, you're going to write a lot of crap, and you're going to write stuff that's not good. You just need to write. It's about showing up. Something I do a lot, I work from home. You get very restless and you want to get the hell out of your house at the end of your workday. I love to drive. It's like my meditation. And when I have ideas while I'm driving, you obviously cannot write while you're driving unless you want to cause an accident. I'll just pull up my iPhone and record voice memos. If I have an idea, just timestamp it and say, here's an idea I have. Or if I am sitting down, just email it to myself. You know, like Aris and I were talking about a Doritos commercial for the Super Bowl contest we filmed together like 6 years ago. I had this idea and I cast him in it. And I remember I had like 20 emails I had emailed myself every time I had an idea. And I looked back at those emails and I was like, we got this shit done. And I was just writing it down. I was just saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to go. And that's how you manifest stuff for yourself. And I think Michael, that's one of my goals, is to direct and write my own feature. And I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, whoa, Shayna, you got to get on it. Like, it's time. It's past time. But also, let's talk a little bit about your cast, because who plays your parents? We talk about it in the pilot, but we filmed the pilot of this podcast a long time ago. So who plays your parents in Maybe Someday?
Yeah, they're the best. Sam Anderson, who we both know, and if we've talked about him previously, but if you look him up, people listening, you'll know who he is. Bernard on Lost, and he was in Forrest Gump, the principal.
Yeah,
like, your son is not... Not what? What's the line?
Your IQ is 75.
Don't everybody tell you you're not smart or something, and then it cuts to Sam. He's like, your son is not very smart or something like
and,
that.
And he definitely sleeps with Sally Field in the...
Yes,
in the...
yes. Yeah. It's such an iconic scene. It's such a memorable, iconic scene. But anyway, so Sam plays my dad and he's amazing. And then Allie Mills, who was the Norma on The Wonder Years, one of my favorite shows.
The mom on The Wonder Years.
Yeah, she plays my mom. So that was, right away, was a dream come true for me because I had watched it both my whole life growing up on various shows, and especially, you know, The Wonder Years for sure was always one of my favorites. So that was pretty awesome. And they're so good in the movie. Like, they're so good. You write characters and you have fun. Those are my favorite scenes to write. And after we got on set and we shot them and then we were editing, it was like, oh shit, I wish I would have wrote more scenes with them because they're so
good.
So good. Like, it's crazy how good they are in it. So yeah, very, very happy.
That segues me to an interesting question, because for the other fellow indie filmmakers that might listen to this episode that we know, the first question they're going to think of is, oh, how did he get these guys? I know the answer to how you synced up with Sam Anderson. He was the co-artistic director of a theater company Michael and I were both in, the Road Theater in North Hollywood. But then how did you get connected to Allie Mills? Did Sam bring her on, or what was the process there?
No, ironically, I mean, they knew each other, obviously, through the years. They dated briefly. I don't think Sam would mind if I shared that. But,
yeah, I probably wouldn't care.
Yeah, I found that out on set. But,
that's funny.
No, ironically, Allie is on The Bold and the Beautiful, or was on The Bold and the Beautiful.
Oh, so
my producers... I when we were trying to figure out who to cast, I was like, is Allie available by chance? You know, and they were like, yeah, we'll give it to her. We'll ask her about it. And she read it and she's like, I'm in for
sure.
So
very cool.
I was over the moon. That was the best day of my life. Would find out that, yeah, Norma Arnold was going to be playing my mom. Because I always thought I was Kevin Arnold growing up. So,
good. Yeah, this is a great lesson in don't be afraid to ask, because I noticed, yes, Michael, when you said, they gave me their script, and I'm normally not this guy. You said that. But I have a script I wrote. The worst that could have happened is that they tell Michael, no, we're not interested.
Yep, 100%.
Big fucking deal. Like, you have to get 100 no's before you get a yes. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want, because I always say, when the universe talks to you, it talks back. I feel like it's kind of a full circle moment about our houses or homes choosing us. I feel like when you're talking about, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm in this depressed funk. What would happen if my child showed up at my door, my future child, and saw me like this? And then it's like your screenplay chose you. You're walking, you're seeing scenes that you want to include in the film, the parents swinging their daughter. Mm-hmm. It's like the film is choosing you. The story starts to choose you. And the universe will throw you those affirmations. You get people connected to The Bold and the Beautiful on the phone with you that can make this movie happen. You know, you were brave enough to ask, hey, you know, what about Allie Mills? What's the worst that could have happened? She could have read your screenplay and said, I'm not interested. Big fucking deal. Like, half of it is, I'm hearing this guy Ben, who created Startup, is a dude from Michigan. You know, he could have said, you know what, I don't want to take any chances. I'm not gonna pursue a career in Hollywood. He's a guy that has taken chances on his ideas. He's rolled the dice, whether it's a smaller indie short film, but look at this. He has a hit show on Netflix. So the inspiration I'm getting from this is just, do the work. And it's a lot of a numbers game. Aris, you know, so much, you're such a steadily working actor and so focused on the craft of acting. I don't know anyone who auditions more than you.
No, I don't either.
And nobody, usually if I come to you with a project, you're usually saying yes. You truly love the craft of acting and just working that muscle. And like you said, you might go through those lulls where you're not booking or whatever, but get ready. Because then all of a sudden I notice over the years I've known you, Aris, when you book, you're booking one thing after another. It usually comes in those spurts, like, oh my God, I'm working on 10 things. Then you'll kind of get a break. And so I think, but I want to be clear about this, Michael. Maybe someday it's on Prime. Is it streaming anywhere else?
I'm trying to remember. We got it, I think, like Vimeo, maybe Vudu, but that's it.
It's not on iTunes or anything like that?
No, you know what? Actually, now
I thought you told
that,
me it might have been on
iTunes. I think it might be on iTunes as well.
I just bought it on Prime. Super cheap. I own it. You know, it's I love it that when I look at my movies Shayna owns, I see Michael sitting there. Maybe the poster
that's
maybe
awesome.
Sunday. Yeah.
Well, no, I appreciate it. I do. And we're still trying to get it out there. That's the thing. We never got that. You know, we had some meetings lined up right before the pandemic hit. And then the pandemic hit and all the interest just kind of was lost because it was, you know.
Because everybody
was
trying to survive this shit.
Yeah. And people weren't really thinking at the time. I don't know why. And I guess because we were all just like, what the hell is going on? We're in the Twilight Zone now. Mm-hmm. But people weren't thinking about streaming as much. Like, ooh, let's bust out a lot of new content because people are going to be staying home.
And binge watching.
So, yeah. So a lot of people are like,
laid off from your jobs.
Yeah. So a lot of the companies we were going to meet with were going, well, we'll be in touch. We'll talk later, years from now.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be in this shit for a while. So yeah, it's kind of lost momentum. So we're trying to get that back and try to get more meetings again and try to get, because it never really got a fighting chance at all. We just self-distributed it with no publicity, which is still a pretty incredible thing that even with no publicity, nothing, just having some of the names attached that we have, because we've got a lot of amazing actors in it. Kim Atula, Sir Darius Blaine, who's on the show called The Big Leap right now, on I forget what network, but Fox, I think, cool. Which is, I think it's doing well. He's one of the leads on that. The dude, I love him more than anything. He's working all the time. We have to get him on this too one day, because he is just a walking inspiration and I adore him. He's such a good dude and a great actor. He's one that plays my best friend in the movie. Skip.
Oh, cool.
But he's
who
another
plays
one.
Your
he's
daughter?
Like,
who's the actress?
Oh,
that
Sage. Yeah. Her name's Sage Ryan. She's, cool. She's actually killing it right now. I'm so proud of her. She's, there's a group called Smosh. That's a huge, huge, comedic group online that I've loved them for years. And, we auditioned a lot of great, great actors for that part. But when Sage came in, her and I just instantly clicked, and we immediately started talking about Transformers and Star Wars, and I'm a huge nerd, so we instantly started to bond and vibe, and I was like, this is literally like my future daughter.
She's
right
playing
here.
My daughter.
So yeah literally. So I was like, this is a no-brainer, and she's a great actor. So and then get this, I mean, at the premiere of Maybe Someday, when we screened it at the Carmel Film Festival years ago, I don't even remember what year that was, but we both showed up wearing the exact same R2-D2 socks.
Oh my god.
We had no idea. Yeah, we weren't even like, we had no communication about that, nothing.
When it's fate, it picks you.
Yeah.
That's another example.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. So yeah, I love her to pieces, and she's really doing well right now online, and she's got a lot of followers, and yeah, Sage Ryan is her name, and she's on Smosh right now with the Smosh gang, who I've been in love with for years now. I think they're the funniest, and she's a part of them now, and which is even creepier, because I had a dream like 3 years ago that I was part of the Smosh team.
What?
And then now she is. So just again, talk about, yeah, like people that you meet in life that you're like connected to on like a real like spiritual level. Yeah. She's one of them for sure. So, yeah. So then, a lot of amazing actors, Eden Malin, who's a good friend of mine. She's been on a bunch of stuff. She was in Deadheads with me and now she's working a lot as well. Yeah, the list just goes on and on of incredible. Emily Carota, like I said, Eris, who's from, you know, from Gilmore Girls, she plays a really small role.
Yeah,
she's incredible. Yeah, I wrote the role as just like this neighbor that, you know, kind of just opens the door and is just very, it's very like simple, you know, in the wrong hands could just be a, not, I hate to say it, but a forgettable part. Mm-hmm. And she took it to like a, it, from a 0 to 10 scale,
she's
she took it to like a 27. I was like, oh my god, I don't know where this came from, but she's so funny. She's like, oh my god, she took every. She's a good testament of an actor taking not much that's given to them and really just elevating it to like a memorable status. You know, where every time she's on screen, you remember every one of her lines and can quote every one of her lines like years after seeing the movie. So she's so awesome. And then Charlie Robinson, rest in peace, who just passed away, who is in the movie. He was, I loved him so much and had so many good memories with him. And he plays Edgar in the movie, the one that is in the elderly group that I'm teaching for free, that my character, he goes for whatever reason, because he can talk about books and stuff with them. So it's kind of his way out of the house and to get some human interaction. And so Charlie plays sort of like his mentor in a way in the movie, my character's mentor. And he's the one that kind of gives him that hard truth, that hard, honest reality check. And he's so good in the movie, and you just love him. Every scene he's in, he's just so good. We actually, speaking of scenes that get cut, we have two scenes shot with him that I would love to have like a director's cut or something one day, or some way to release these scenes, because we had to cut them from the movie because they just made the movie too long and they weren't really, you know, we didn't have to have, it was the same thing like with me in Startup. It just didn't really have to be there to move the story along. And it kind of like, they were really like sweet, kind of Robin Williams, Matt Damon, Good Will Hunting type moment scenes on the bench type scenes where, you know, the feel good, but it just sort of like killed the pace. We wanted to kind of keep the movie moving.
Yeah.
And so we had to kill them and the babies. And that was the hardest thing ever.
I have a question for you about that, Michael.
Yeah.
You know, interesting, post-production indie filmmakers all know this. Now, you didn't direct, who directed Maybe Someday?
Yeah, his name's Ryan Moulton. He did a lot of YouTube Funny or Die stuff, and that's what drew me to him, was his comedic kind of... he actually shot... He was a DP on a movie called New Low that did really good at Sundance years ago, and so that's what really drew me to him. And
I have a question about that, because so you didn't direct, but you're obviously the writer of the film. Were you in the editing room for the whole thing? Were you and the director kind of sat side by side and were able to say, you had say in what was going to go and stay with him?
Well, honestly, for the editing, not as much. We kind of let Ryan fly with it.
Okay.
And he just sort of did his thing and pieced the movie together. And then we would give him notes, send him notes, ideas. But I was in more of the, like the sound, that whole process of like music, adding the music in. I picked all the songs for the movie and that sort of thing, which I love doing. And and I'm really proud of the soundtrack. We got some really cool bands, some really well-known bands. And then actually, random crazy story about the universe again. There's an artist, her name's Annalyn Williams. She goes by the name Lottie Kessner, who I have been a fan of for so long. When I first moved to LA, like, her music is all I would play. And I don't even remember how I found her. I think it was through like a music magazine raving about her. But I would listen to her music all the time. Like, I went through a breakup and I would put her music on and cry. And like, she writes these just really beautiful melodies. And randomly I had an idea for one of her songs in the movie. And I was like, wow, this song would work so well in the movie. I would love to use this song. There's probably no way I could afford it. I literally sent her an email, and I found her on, I don't even know if it was Facebook or I found her email online. I don't even remember, but I just shot her a message just being like, hey, I know this is a long shot. I don't know what you would charge, but I would love to use your song in this movie. I mean, she had music on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And like,
which is one of your favorite shows.
One of my favorite shows of all time. And two of her songs are featured in season 6 with her band Trespassers William, which is incredible. She's just the best. And so I was, you know, I was like, this is a long shot. She responded to me. Not only did she respond to me, she said, look, she goes, she's the biggest, just such an angel and an amazing person. And she literally goes, I'm going to be honest. She's like, this song that you're asking for, it's owned by like Warner Brothers and it would cost you like a fortune. But why don't I write you an original song for your movie? Yeah. So I'm like, wait, what? I'm sorry, what? So she literally wrote a song called In Glass that is featured heavily in the movie that she wrote for the movie, that's now on one of her albums that's been released all over the world. And it was like a huge hit album overseas and like did really well in Japan. And like that song is on the album now. And again, yeah, she was one of the artists that I used to just greatly admire before this process. So again, a testament to what we talked about, don't be afraid to ask, you know, and just say, hey, is this possible? You know, because you never know what's going to happen.
This is getting biblical. Ask, it's not even so a Christian podcast. Ask and thou shall receive. And one of my favorite quotes is that I always say it wrong, but knock and the door will be open to you. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and if it doesn't open, it's not your door. So there's so many stories you have behind this, Michael, where
it's nuts.
A singer-songwriter that you're a fan of, that's, you know, achieves commercial success. We just talked about that. Said, right. I'm going to do this for you. I'm saying yes to you. The beautiful team said yes to you. Sam and Allie Mills said yes to you. Yeah. You know, it's, and when something, as creatives, we also know this too, when something doesn't feel meant to be, you'll also feel that resistance from the universe, or it won't feel as organic, and then you might decide to move on to something else. But even though you've had some struggles with distribution, I think it's going to be another, like if you decide to fully pursue distribution again for maybe someday, I think that it's just going to be another thing where you're just busting down those doors until you get it. You know, I believe that you will. And because there's it is a special film with really relatable themes in it. And for indie filmmakers, which is the heart and soul of this whole podcast and this conversation, it's not really about commercial success. It's about creating things and creating, you know, and that's, and sometimes that evolves into bigger projects, things like This Is Us or Gilmore Girls or Startup. But it's about doing the work, and you never know who you're going to help that maybe is struggling with drinking or feels stuck or is struggling with anxiety or depression or feels like they can't get to the next chapter of their life, which I love that maybe someday does so well. So I'll say thank you for your work. You know, you both inspire me, and that's why I'm so glad that we're staying in touch and through this podcast. Yeah. And anything else, guys, before we wrap it up?
No, that was very inspiring to me too. I'm like, I gotta sit down and write something every hour.
You're gonna listen to your inner voice. It keeps saying, I gotta write something. Yeah. You're going, nah. Yeah. But
no, for sure. And remembering too that it is like, I think that's what's helped me, and it's something I'm getting to better at now. I mean, I'm older now, and it's taken me a long time to get there, but I'm letting go of that need in me, that obsession to like please everybody and worry about getting approval from everybody.
People please.
Because I'm learning that that's never going to happen. Like, you can't please everybody. You can't make everybody like everything that you do.
Oh, no.
And that's especially true in the film business. Like, you're never going to make a movie or be an act, you know, turn in a performance that everybody loves, no matter who you are. I know people that hate Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is one of my favorite films. And I know people that hate it, and I would kill that
they don't get it.
Michel Gondry's brain. Yeah, and be able to write a movie like that caliber, like that level of craftsmanship, so you know? And like, but there's people I know that hate it. There's people I know that hate Jim Carrey in that movie.
He's
so good in that movie. But there's people that I know that hate Back to the Future.
Get
out.
You
know, like that genuinely will be like, oh, that movie's so overrated. So that's what I mean. It's like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're back in the day and you're like, you know what? I'm not going to do Back to the Future because maybe it's not good enough, or maybe people won't like it. It's all subjective. Like, it's all subjective. So you just have to do it. If you're in your heart like, I like this, I'm excited about this, you know, then there's zero reason not to chase it and try to do it, you know? There's not.
And there's also that thing Oprah always says before she does any interview, she'll ask the person she's interviewing. She said she didn't even care if it's Brad Pitt. She'll say, what's our intention with this interview? What's the intention? What are we trying to achieve here? And I think if you focus on your intention as a writer or director or actor, like, you know, it's usually, Michael, I feel like we're kind of similar writers in that a lot of the stuff we write, like, you know, I know you are also a huge horror fan and you do things for fun. But then the more dramatic, serious stuff is usually to help people on some level. And if I feel like I'm writing something that's bigger than me, and it's not about my ego, it's going to help. There's a common universal theme that's going to help people here. And that's why we create art, you know? Mm-hmm. And if it feels bigger than you and you feel like you're almost being used as a vessel to kind of convey some sort of message, that's where the magic happens. And you'll be sent the right people that will rally around you to help your dreams actualize. And you'll get the right director, you'll get the right editor, you'll get the right DP, and you'll start to jam out ideas and read each other's minds and finish each other's sentences. And that's when you realize it is bigger than you. You know, and it's a numbers game. Auditioning, writing, you know, like you said, you might write something 5 years ago and then go back to this and go, I thought this was crap, but there's something here. David yeah. Lynch always talks about writing down your ideas. He says ideas are like fish. He always says that. Yeah. They're like fish. And he said there's been a couple of times where he had a couple of good ideas he didn't write down. And he's like, I swear it would have been a hit series. He said, yeah. You'll think I'm going to remember this. Oh, I'll remember. He goes, you won't remember. Write it down. And he's yeah. a perfect example of a filmmaker that is not afraid to be weird. And he is not everybody's cup of tea, David Lynch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you haven't watched Twin Peaks, Eris, highly yeah. recommend it. So it's weird. So good. But it's just, you know, I mean, that's someone who's not afraid to just go big.
Yeah.
And
yeah, imagine
not
if
afraid
he
to fail.
Yeah, imagine if he didn't. If he's like, oh, this shit's way too weird.
It's too weird.
Like it. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. you just got to do it. That's the bottom line. And just, and like you said, don't, you know, you never know who you're going to touch in the process. And that's, I think that really is what makes it special about what we do. And I think yeah. that's what really has helped. I've taken away that need to like show people that I can do it or make it about like, wow, aren't you impressed by
the
what
ego.
I can do?
Yeah.
Right. Letting that go and making it more about, yeah, telling a story that is like, hey, this could help people. Like maybe this, I know this is helping me as I write it. Maybe mm-hmm. it'll other people can feel that same impact. I hope. Because I know it maybe someday already. I think I was about to tell it and I got sidetracked. Shocker. I never do that. I never get off topic and go eight places at once. Sorry, listeners. There was a guy in Texas that reached out to me out of the blue. I don't know him at all. No one associated with the movie knows him at all. Somehow he found the movie and literally said to me in an email, I just want to let you know that after watching your movie, it really made me want to be a better father to my daughter.
Wow.
And and that was it. I was like, you know what? If nothing else happens with this movie, I'm good. I'm good. It was all worth it. Like it was literally yeah. all worth it. So
that right there is yeah. that is why you made the film, you know, and that kind of stuff. It, I mean, I don't know how to put words.
It heals you. It heals others at the same time. It heals.
Yeah.
It heals.
Yeah.
yeah. It heals you yeah. and other people.
And yeah. you're making a difference yeah. in people's lives. And that's, you know, that's what we're talking about. The division of commercial success versus, you know, being able to heal and help people. And I think that yeah. that it's also just asking yourself as an artist and a creative, check in with yourself. Like when Michael, when you said, I'm doing less, I'm not doing the real estate right now because I've realized it's helped me as a therapist to realize I need downtime yes. and I don't want to burn myself out. Now as artists and creatives, people that write screenplays and actors and directors, check in with how you feel. Am I enjoying the process? Am I still having fun? Do I like how right. I feel? Why am I doing this? You know, and it's okay for that to evolve and change. And I think chase the feeling of what makes you feel good and what makes right. you like when I had directed the film a short and took it to festivals, when people I didn't know, just like the person from Texas emailed you, Mike, it came mm-hmm. up to me and said, hey, I experienced death in my family too. They mm-hmm. had tears in their eyes. Like this film helped me, please. Or hearing things like, please keep writing. I would yeah. always tell myself, that's why I made this movie. It was, yeah. it's bigger than me. It's bigger than me. And it's not about me. Right. And it's so interesting. They say that in Meisner technique as actors, it's about the other. It's not about you. Yeah. And that's what I think. That's where the fun happens. That's where we create really great stuff. And yeah, cool. So this was an awesome conversation. I think
yeah,
I'm
for sure.
Shout out to Norm MacDonald, who passed away,
oh,
who was
yeah.
the anchor of fake news on SNL. You guys, I'll tell you about this really quick. This might be a funny note to end on. I had a crazy dream, one of those dreams that felt like it lasted 3 hours a few nights ago, because I was watching a lot of his comedy clips and laughing out loud, and I think I dozed off to a couple. I had a dream that I was back in LA in my old apartment, and Norm MacDonald was there. And we were like looking over my balcony in the valley in North Hollywood. And he goes, are you sure you want to leave? Are you ready to leave? And he was my manager at a restaurant. And he was like, I'll hold your job for you so you can always come back. And I woke up and I was like, oh shit, what does this mean? Wow. So that was my, I was like, and I think it's that anxiety clearly of me feeling a little disconnected from Hollywood in Michigan. Yeah. And just, you know, I even in the dream, I said, I have a work from home job. I can always come back. I'm mobile, you know, but Norm MacDonald, little, he's so my, in some dimension, he's the restaurant manager. It's, but it's funny, but yeah, dreams in our subconscious are funny, but yeah. Oh. So I don't have anything else, guys. Anything else we want to say? We gotta do
follow your dreams.
Follow your damn dreams and don't be afraid to suck.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right, guys. Was that it?
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, bye.